How are you incorporating video in your marketing strategy? Maybe you're doing Facebook Lives or uploading short instructional videos on YouTube. Or maybe you haven't gone down that path just yet. In case you aren't aware, the importance of video marketing is on the increase. According to research conducted by Adobe last year, 48% of consumers were using voice for general web searches. And as technology advances, we'll start to receive more and more video audio clips via our Google Home and Amazon Alexa devices in response. Today, I'm chatting with Maury Morgan, co-founder of the School of Hard Knock Knocks, a stand-up comedy school with locations in Melbourne, Sydney, and Adelaide. He has recently invested into the production of the reality TV series, Is This Thing On?, as a way to build their brand and attract more customers. This is especially important when he works in an industry that many don't realize even exists. Maury is sharing some interesting insight behind the production process, as well as talking about the power of user-generated video. I just know you're going to love it. Without further ado, let's jump in. Welcome to the Marketing and Me podcast. If you're eager to grow your health and wellness business via effective marketing methods while maintaining your own health and wellness, this podcast is for you. I'm your host, Leanne Shelton, and I help business owners, just like you, build trustworthy connections with their ideal clients. And I do this through engaging, conversational copywriting, and strategic advice at Right Time Marketing. So feel free to book in a free 30-minute discovery call with me after listening to today's episode. The details are in the show notes. And today I'm joined by my guest, Maury Morgan. Welcome, Maury.
Good morning.
How's it going?
Oh, very good. Nice and early for me over here in Beijing.
Yes. I'll cover that in a second. I'll read out your bio so everyone knows who you are. So Melbourian Maury Morgan calls himself a wisecracking entrepreneur. I'm so glad I can say entrepreneur now. I couldn't in the past. Anyway, he registered his first business at the age of 18 in Melbourne. And at 25, he created his second business in Shanghai, China. Over the years, he's built and owned a consulting firm, a live music venue, an industry magazine, and most recently, a stand-up comedy school called the School of Hard Knock Knocks. He's also a 3-times TEDx speaker and author through international publishers Wiley with his book Selling Big to China. Currently, he's in Beijing, where he's been based for the past 18 months, and he was actually in China when COVID-19 first appeared. And on that note, you can even find his reporting from the street via his Facebook channel. What was it like over there when COVID first hit?
I think it's very similar to what we in Australia experienced, a kind of denial for the first few weeks, you know, oh, it's okay, this will last a few days. Well, it's, what is it now? It's in the beginning of August and everyone's still on the streets. So we're probably more than half of the people are wearing masks on the street to this day. And the virus became kind of official around February the 3rd. So, yeah.
Crazy. Long time. Yeah. So did you find that the toilet paper thing went first? Is that how it kind of started with you as well?
Not at all. No, actually, the toilet paper, I actually did, as you mentioned in my intro there, I was hearing a lot of panic from my friends all over Australia about the toilet paper, for example, and pasta for some reason. And I just, because China at that point was around 2 months ahead in terms of the, you know, the pandemic, I wanted to just reinforce that, look, you know, in a population of 1.4 billion people, we've got plenty of food, and China doesn't produce enough food itself for its population. It imports a lot. So I just did a quick walk through my local supermarket, the equivalent of Costco in Beijing here, and just took my mobile phone with me with my mask on, kind of pulled my mask down and spoke to the camera briefly, and then put that on my personal page, just my personal one, and it got to 150,000 views. Wow. through friends saying this is what I needed because of this unknown factor. And I think that's that was the right thing to do at the right time, because there was just so much unknowns, but China already knew. And the problem always with China is it's very bad at marketing itself, and it does a really bad, you know, way of marketing itself because of its restrictions on social media. So there wasn't many voices in English coming out of China at that point. So we didn't really know what was happening in China, and of course, the hundreds of conspiracy theories about what was really happening in China. Yeah. And so I just try to fill that void, and I'm safe, and China's in a very strong position, as we know, and the US isn't, which is the irony of those two different government models, right?
Yeah, 100%. And we kind of, you know, we're going through the ups and downs. We're like, oh, yeah, we're really good. And then, oh, no, it's kind of dipping again. And, fingers crossed it all kind of eases soon. But is it there a lot less panic? It's like, what's the situation in terms of lockdowns or going out and about where you are?
Well, it went through the similar lockdowns that we have experienced right across Australia. There are still somewhat restrictions. Depends. Look, it is, China's a weird one. There is, the rule of law is very strong, but also the rule of man, to use an expression, meaning that if your local government in your district of Beijing or Shanghai happens to be a bit more lax, or the police in that area are a bit more lax, then the bars and restaurants in that area are also more lax. So I've been to restaurants where there must be a gap left between each person. And then I've been to a bar afterwards where it's shoulder to shoulder and no one's wearing masks. So, you know, they're both within about a 2-3 kilometer distance from each other, but in two different districts of Beijing. So, but in terms of what's happening on the street, I go for a walk every day around the park. Most people in the park are not wearing masks. They have public table tennis tables with old Chinese men playing. None of them are wearing masks. But when you get into the subway, you must wear a mask in the subway. And when you walk into any building, whether it be the subway or an office building or even a restaurant, you need to get your temperature taken. So whether those temperature digital thermometers are accurate or not, I'm not sure, but it does create a level of self-policing. That if you do feel a bit ill and you think that you may have a fever, you're not going to risk going out and being embarrassed by being stopped. Because if you are stopped, I don't know what happens actually. I don't know if a white truck pulls up and two guys bundle you in the back. Maybe that's what happens.
Yeah. and I have to say, you know, I commented before COVID hit actually that I always admired, you know, Asian populations of having, you know, wearing masks when they're unwell. And I always thought, I wish, because as a, you know, obviously Australian, I'd feel awkward wearing a mask if I had a bit of a cold. Whereas I did always admired how, you know, Asians walk around with a mask to protect, you know, go, I'm a bit on. And obviously the irony is now we all do. And I think then going forward, it might be more commonplace for any nationality to walk around with a mask if they're slightly under the weather. Of course, if you're really not well, just stay home. And growing up for me, it was unless you're vomiting or you're dying, you're going to school. It's been a bit different for my kids now in recent months. Ooh, you've got a slight sniffle. Better stay home. And it just changes your mindset with everything. Absolutely. But anyway, this episode isn't that COVID. I did want to cover. So you're obviously in Beijing now, but you're originally from Melbourne. You've founded businesses, both Australia and China. So I'd love to hear more about your business journey and why you call yourself a wisecracking entrepreneur.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, I'm on my way back to Melbourne. My last two flights have been cancelled, unfortunately, because of COVID. So I should have been there. My project here in China has finished. Yeah, if you looked at my resume, you'd think, what on earth? This person's all over the place. But looking back, there is a bit of a consistency in my travels. I, as you mentioned in my intro, I was 18 when I started my business. So I've always been entrepreneurial. I've always been looking, being creative. I think what Melbourne taught me I studied microbiology at RMIT in Melbourne, RMIT University in Melbourne, and then worked in the medical corps in the Australian Army while I was studying that. And I also studied Mandarin. So here I am in China during COVID, having the background of microbiology behind me, which is one of my favorite quotes is a microbiologist by the name of Louis Pasteur says, chance favors the prepared mind. And that I've lived with that since I learned that quote in my microbiology days back when I was in my 18, 19, 20 years of age. I'm a big believer in this chance favors the prepared mind because it just means that you're constantly learning and you don't know when that learning will become important, but your mind and eyes and your ears are more open for opportunities. And it's just such an important mantra to have as an entrepreneur because entrepreneurs, as the name suggests, enter, they start things that others don't. So they need to see things that others don't. So that was the first one. So I think Melbourne, my life in Melbourne up until I was 25, taught me chance favors the prepared mind. Then I needed to see the world and I did what my father had done. He traveled around the world and met my mother. Mother's from Wales, dad's from Australia. They met in Canada. And somehow I thought this must be part of the Morgan family tradition.
Yeah.
And the Bell side, my mother's side. And so I went traveling for 9 months with a backpack just by myself. Had a round the world ticket. And that got me my second mantra, which was go big or go home. I was quite a timid person at the age of 25, but when I returned after 9 months, I was probably 26, maybe even 27 at that time, or 26 certainly, I had a different view of the world. I was taking risks in terms of, you know, moving outside my comfort zone. I was putting myself in front of people I wouldn't have normally done. Otherwise I would be very lonely for 9 months. So it's traveling all over the place, meeting friends. In fact, on that journey, I met my wife. So obviously we didn't get married immediately. It wasn't a shotgun wedding or a LA, like a Las Vegas wedding. We dated for a while, but I did meet her. So that was my second sort of travel tip, go big or go home as an entrepreneur. And we'll probably talk about that with today's conversation about the TV show that I produced is you really have to, the BHAG, you may have heard of big, hairy, audacious goals as an entrepreneur. Collins, I can't think of his surname, Jim Collins coined that term in From Good to Great, the book From Good to Great. And I'm a big believer in that BHAG, big, hairy, audacious goal, or in my words, go big or go home. So I've always since 26 onwards, I've taken bigger risks in terms of entrepreneurship and marketing. And that's paid off for the most part. You've got to have a thick skin when you've got that attitude though. And then the last thing, when I moved to China in 2001 and I spent 12 years in China before returning back to Australia and then again returning back to China, I learned from working in China that because of the heavy-handed rule of authority here in China in respect to social media, visas. At one point in China, there was Facebook, there was Twitter, everything was open. And then back in 2008, that all came crumbling down. Constraint is the mother of invention, not necessity. That's my third mantra. Constraint, not necessity, is the mother of invention. Because when you do, anyone who has worked in China, I commend them because they have to operate with a global mindset, but within the constrictions of social media. So for example, this is a Zoom call. Zoom is now banned in China. For me to call you, I can't use Zoom.
Oh, really?
I have to register with a bureau, a government bureau, so they can keep tabs on who I am. Now, I get around this in a way that I'm not going to discuss on this publicly.
Get them other people to zoom into you, right? Then it's received.
Well, that's one option, and privately I'll tell you some other ways. But it creates, living in China has made me think, all right, well, I can't do this, so how can I get around that? And in a way, that creates new ideas, because we as Australians are incredibly complacent people, because we have everything. Nothing's banned in Australia. We can do everything, right? And so that we, as a consequence, we don't try new things. And if you look just quickly on historical food, if you're a foodie, you look at Chinese food, it's the most, it's wide-ranging from, Sichuan spicy food to Cantonese, baked pork to Beijing duck to Shanghai dumplings. It's all very unusual. And if you look at the reason for this, it's because of limitations or constraints to the ingredients that they had during the many, many turbulent times of Chinese history over the last 13 dynasties. So it's that constraint actually is a strength. And we are in COVID-19. It is one of the biggest constraints that we as Australians have had since possibly World War II. This is when entrepreneurs should start to shine.
I love that. And I just want to, on each of those mantras that you shared, I can 100% comment each of them, how I react to them. And, the chance favors the prepared mind. And it's like, my first career, I landed into a telesales job and I hated it. It was the first thing I could get out of uni, being very green. But you know what? Telesales, it built up that confidence. On the phone now, I'm fine, I'm comfortable. I also, because I wanted to do journalism, I studied a freelance journalism thing, and then I also did a radio interviewing course, and then later on did a TV presenting thing. And just because I came up, oh, that sounds really fun. And now, obviously, those skills I can use for the podcast, for my webinars, yes, for my training, and it's all kind of, it's all those opportunities that come up, go, I have the confidence in doing that because those things came up. The go big or go home, definitely with me, because I always felt like I was destined for something big in this life. I don't want a mediocre life. I want to, live the best possible life. So I'm always looking for new opportunities. I'm getting better at investing in myself. That's a fairly new thing for me. The podcast is pretty big, and I've been trying a lot of new things lately. And, that brings me into the third one about constraint, not necessity, is the mother of invention. And with COVID, yes, 100%. I know myself, so many other business owners have done these massive changes in their business because they were constrained, because those constraints they had. Mm. They couldn't have those face-to-face workshops like me. So you have to move to webinars, or you don't have a store, physical store now, so you have to do things more online. And 100% new ideas. I've witnessed it firsthand. Just lie around you, don't they?
They do. Yeah, absolutely. And when you look back on your life, there is a bit of a Slumdog Millionaire type of reaction where you go, of course, you've got to know what that movie is all about. It's about somebody living a life that is set perfectly to the questions in How to Become a, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? So the questions specifically in Who Wants to Be a Millionaire were linked directly, almost as if it was ordained to his life in this story. And I look back and go, everything that I've done seems to have helped me to this point in time. And it sounds like the same with you, particularly because I'm assuming when you studied podcasting, when you studied journalism and prior to graduating, podcasts weren't the thing. I imagine there was probably only a few, if not
no,
many.
100%. It was a radio interviewing thing, and we had the little disc, mini disc things, which I didn't have a player for it. So I'm like, well, might as well just throw this away because I don't have anything to listen to it, after this course. It was, I was like, oh, I want to have a radio station, a segment on a radio show or something. And then when podcasting came up, I'm like, oh, that's my way around this, and I can do it from home, and I don't have to go into a studio. 100%. Okay, so today I want to talk about optimizing video in business for brand building and attracting new leads. Based on the fact that you produced an awesome web series called Is This Thing On for your stand-up comedy school, The School of Hard Knock Knocks, which I love the name of. So, I'm really interested to hear the story, process, and investment behind that whole web series and where you hope it's going to go in the future.
Yeah, thanks. Well, it is a web series, and it was developed, do I have another mantra for this? I'm not sure. I don't think I do. But when I went out initially, and this was just over 2 years ago, to create this web series called Is This Thing On, I had the plan at this and the belief in me, myself, that this would go straight to the ABC, would be a big hit, and then would get international, picked up by international networks like the BBC and so on. Didn't quite work out that way because the ABC, about 2 months later, was in a calamity. I think the CEO was fired and, cutbacks and so on. But constraint is the mother of invention, right? So we've already discussed that. And anyway, we had produced this six-episode series. Now, the reason we produced a six-episode series was as a way of go big or go home. I wanted to do some marketing to brand the School of Hard Knock Knocks, which at that time was running stand-up comedy in Sydney, Melbourne, and Adelaide. And this is pre-COVID, was beginning to grow, was certainly on the cusp of a six-figure business. And I wanted to push it, obviously, beyond into the seven-figure, so the million-dollar-plus space. I didn't have much competitors. Had one or two, but I saw a huge opportunity within the market. Essentially, 99.99% of my customers had never thought about doing a stand-up comedy course before because they didn't know that it existed. So it's that whole you create the market. So for many businesses, you already have a market made for you, whether it's, for example, in the health and mindfulness area, you've got things like yoga. Pilates, if you're a yoga instructor or a Pilates instructor, the market's already defined. Most people, even if they've never done it before, they know what it is. And that can be good and bad because we all have preconceived concepts of what yoga is. For me, yoga's like golf. It's far too slow and boring. Anyway, that's in my mind, whether that's true or not. Although my wife's got me doing aerobics in our quarantine space. So I'm a changed man.
Yeah.
So in my business, in the stand-up comedy world, there really was only one perceived way of becoming a stand-up comedian, and that was you went out to a pub and they asked volunteers and you got up on stage and you embarrassed yourself for 4 years. And after 4 years, hopefully you learned something. Maybe someone saw something in you and then you had a Netflix special. That was kind of the perceived career path, and yet I thought there was some other way. So the School of Hard Knock Knocks was born because I wanted to be a better speaker, public speaker, not necessarily a comedian. I did a course. I thought it was good. I thought I could do better because I'd worked in training and development at that point for about 16 years, and I built the course with a lot of input from famous and very talented comedians like your Chris Franklins, your Greg Fleets, Glenn Nicholas. I'm not sure if these names are Elliot Goblet. I'm not sure if you remember him from probably the Hey Hey It's Saturday days.
Yeah, my dad was a big fan of him. He'd always talk about Elliot Goblet. And then I'm like, who is this guy? Because I was too young to watch him. He was a big fan of my dad.
Of Elliot. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So awesome people. And then the obvious thing was then to go big or go home. How can I make this massive? How can I hit, 25 million Australians, which 99.999% had never heard of our brand, didn't know we existed. But when I asked people who signed up to our course, probably two-thirds of them had said to me, I've always wanted to do stand-up comedy. I've always wanted to do stand-up comedy, and yet you didn't know that you could do a stand-up comedy course. Well, that's the problem. So that's where Is This Thing On was born. Had an idea, went to a friend who was a director called Stig Weems in Melbourne, and sort of we bounced balls off the wall and spitballed and all the other metaphors that you do when you create new ideas. And together we came up with this formula, which is the six episodes, which I'm pretty proud of.
Yeah, they're really cool. So I've watched the first couple and it's so professional. Like it's just like any of the other, I'm not a big reality TV show person, but when I watch it, like I really get into it. So I try to avoid it usually for that reason. Yeah, nice. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. And I had heard of School of Hard Knock Knocks through, I had done like professional speaking. I did a boot camp and I knew a couple of people who did that, who went through the School of Hard Knock Knocks and shared their videos on LinkedIn or whatever.
Wow,
and that kind of, yeah, that sparked my interest going, ooh, I'd love to do that. And then, of course, I mentioned it to my husband. He goes, you reckon you're funny enough? And, you know, because it's brought up in that show that a lot of people think they're funny, but then they get up on stage and they crash and burn because there's a lot of technique to it, isn't it? Isn't it?
There is. Our biggest critique or, yeah, our biggest critics would always say to us, you can't teach stand-up comedy. Like it's some natural skill. Well, I think the confusion is maybe you can't teach someone to be funny, right? But stand-up comedy is very different. Stand-up comedy is about timing. It's about joke structure. It's about eye contact. It's about confidence. It's about volume, tone, speed, and pauses. Just like any presentation that you might give as a public, you know, as a business professional, stand-up comedy can be learnt, just like singing, guitar, painting, all these other artistic fields have coaches. Why not stand-up comedy? And in fact, we have seen the 2017, I'm just trying to think, was it 2018 runner-up, sorry. Gavin Semple was a graduate of our school. I saw him on day one of his stand-up comedy career because he attended our course at the age of, I think he was 18 years of age. 2 years later, almost to the day, he came second at Raw Comedy, part of the Melbourne International Comedy Festival's big competition, which sadly hasn't yet run in 2020. So, you know, he came second and he was, I would say, pretty appalling as an 18-year-old nobody because he didn't have structure down, he didn't have confidence down, and the people that helped him in those early days made him, a really great professional stand-up comedian today.
Wow, you're very cool. It just shows, obviously he would have committed to it and would have done lots of gigs.
300, we certainly won't take the credit for his hard work. He did 300, but he certainly, his coaches were Brad Oakes and Ben Horowitz, two veteran comedians. And I think that those two guys set him in the right path. Otherwise.
Like exactly. As a starting point, you have no idea where to begin. So they would have definitely given that groundwork. And so with the series, what was the whole process? Like, did you just, was it a group of people who had enrolled anyway and go, all right, letting you know you're going to have a camera on your face for 6 days and then have multiple cameras? Like, it just sounds like a very overwhelming big thing to do.
Yeah, that's right. So we weren't sure. So for those of who have not watched Is This Thing On Yet, it covers 10 newbie comedians who have either done comedy maybe once or twice or never at all, who go into a class of the School of Hard Knock Knocks, a real class. These are not actors. And they get coached over 5 days by professional comedians like Greg Fleet, Glenn Nicholas, Brad Oakes, Jack Levi, who is Elliot Goblet, that's his character name, and they not only get trained in what stand-up comedy is, but then they get challenged. So in episode 2, for example, they have to do life drawing. Life drawing is where you paint a nude model, and they have this very, very muscular model, and he happens to be the son of the comedian, Mayumi Nobetsu. It's true. They are actually related. There's no setup here. And then Mayumi Nobetsu, he's such a lovely lady and such a bubbly personality, then turns to the students and says, no, it's not just my son who's getting naked. Everyone's getting naked. You've got to come out of your skin. I mean, it's such a metaphor for stand-up comedy, you know, or any type of presentations, if you're nervous, imagine your audience naked.
Yes, well, exactly.
Yeah, well, they had to get naked. And, you know, we saw a few bums and some wrinkles and a bit of cellulite here and there. Very good camera work, I should add. It is purely PG. There's no M rating on that episode. But those were the kind of challenges. And the big challenge at the end of the season, of season one, is skydiving. Like they say, you know, what's more terrifying than presenting is death, or maybe presenting's scarier than death. What's as close to death as possible? Well, we thought jumping out of an aeroplane would be suitable. So we put them all up in their gear with their parachute harnesses. They do tandem jumping, and we send them to Moorabbin Airport in Melbourne during winter in some pretty harsh weather.
Yeah.
And I can tell you there was some very tight sphincters in that episode.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that would be absolutely fine. Because I'd be like, yeah, I'm actually not so bad with on stage, but drops like that, I'd be like, ah. I have said, look, I do like the I fly thing, like do the same sensation without the drop.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. I haven't done that yet either. Cool. And so,
season two.
Yeah.
Season two.
Yeah. And so the investment into it, because obviously you knew this was going to be a really good marketing tool for behind the scenes of what the course is all about, but yeah. It was a fair big investment, wasn't it?
Yeah, look, I'll be very transparent. It's around about $50,000 all up, and that's the – so when you do produce a show, you've got to take into consideration, of course, for us it was – you've got – if you're ever considering doing a web series, there's two ways that you can do a web series. One is what we did, which is a factual show. So it's unscripted, factual. Everyone, no one was given lines. You asked the question earlier about who were these people. They were people who signed up. They actually signed up to do this course as a normal course of the School of Hard Knock Knocks. So then they were told, actually, you have the opportunity to be on a show. Do you want to take the opportunity? They all said yes. So they thought they were signing up to a normal course. So we did get real characters.
Is it more extreme? Like, or does the actual course have that nude painting and skydiving?
Not yet, but who knows? Maybe that is the new version. It was incredibly exhausting for that week, I can tell you, of filming pretty much from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. every day. The normal course isn't those hours. Sorry, just come back. So they all did the course. And so in terms of costs, we spent around $50,000 all up. That's the budget. And that budget can continue because now we're in the marketing stage. Although we've produced all the shows, we haven't released them. Now we're in that SEO window where we're looking at getting the best search engine optimization and lead generation from the multiple formats that you can create from video. Because what we've done is we've created long form video. This is each episode's 30 minutes. Within a 30-minute segment, there are 30-second, 60-second, 2-minute snippets.
So
of conversation.
Yes, yes.
Absolutely. That we then cut down into Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. We created what we call it a sizzle reel, which is a kind of a trailer. And that has over 13,000 views on its own. You know, at the moment I'm running episode 2 Facebook advertising only to people in Melbourne because we've got some Melbourne courses coming up and we're not yet... even though Melbourne's under lockdown and Sydney and Adelaide are not, at the point of this recording, who knows tomorrow, I'm very targeted and we've received over, between those, around 5,000 views just in Melbourne alone. So in terms of that budget, $50,000, that could be a year budget for a medium-sized business. But we filmed this 2 years ago. And we're still getting, you know, it's like the lamb roast. It's still appearing in sandwiches and soup and kids, you know, lunches and pies.
Yeah.
It is the meat that keeps giving. Long form video.
Yeah, brilliant. And look, and in terms of, yeah, so the time frame and also the return on investment in terms of if you're running multiple courses throughout the year and how much every student pays, you'll cover that cost in no time, really. It's that initial investment, but the long-term gain.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's if we only focus on what we deliver at the moment. And that's not the long-term goal. The long-term goal is that we do have venues in every city. Melbourne will be our first one in 2021. That will be a comedy room. Well, we've got marketing that will help bring people to, you know, bums on seats. That comedy room will have a restaurant and a bar, and, you know, there'll be a TV, and on that TV there will be a video of, is this thing on, playing, and so that $50,000 investment will keep giving probably for the next 10 years or so, quite easily. We have no close-up shots of anyone on a Nokia 2110 or, you know, or driving an original, you know, the last Holden Commodore. So it's not going to age.
Yeah, brilliant. That's so good. And so it's a web series at the moment, but you've got dreams, don't you, for it to go elsewhere?
It is a web series for episodes 1 and 2 and the trailer. For all episodes, so 1 through to 6, will go onto Apple TV. And again, this is... I mentioned earlier that I thought, oh, I hope we go to ABC. I hope we get picked up there. But actually, looking back, that was a godsend that that didn't happen, because what happens when ABC buys you is that they own the rights for a period of time and within a region. So that would be Australia, possibly also New Zealand. And that meant that if they didn't get a good run for episode, for season one, then they wouldn't commission season two, which would make it very difficult for us to continue. We wouldn't get that earned media. Earned media is that expression meaning that it's the branding and marketing that you get without paying for it. All right. So when someone shares something on social media of your brand, that's called earned media. When you pay for it, it's paid media. So we might get a lump sum of money from ABC, and wouldn't be a lot because it's ABC. But then we would miss out on that earned media as well. So the long term is to get it onto Apple TV. Now, as soon as we get it onto Apple TV, which will be hopefully next month, we've got another huge SEO advantage, and that is IMDb. IMDb stands for Internet Movie Database, which is now owned by Amazon.
Oh.
And I think someone became a multi-billionaire from that deal, because it was just a... possibly a project amongst a bunch of uni students.
Yeah, probably.
So
give up who's who in the celebrity world and movies.
That's right. Now, how many companies who listen to this podcast have got a listing in IMDb? Probably very few. But IMDb has a huge authority within SEO.
I was going to say
the massive authority.
Yeah.
So we might say, oh, you know, we're searching for Google hits. We want to be on the first page of Google, for example, or even YouTube, which is the second largest search engine. But what about the other very authoritative SEO platforms? And one is IMDb. So as soon as we get, is this thing on IMDb, then we can list that it was produced by the School of Hard Knock Knocks.
Yeah.
And the School of Hard Knock Knocks is a comedy. And then that links us to all the comedy shows in the world ever produced. And because we're bidding in the SEO space for stand-up comedy as a keyword search, we will just jump, you know, from page 100 to page 1 very quickly. Again, supported by Amazon.com. So a bit of a strategic decision there. An expensive strategic decision, but still one.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And are there any like comedy schools overseas? Like, how did you get the initial idea for it? It was a gap in the market in Australia, and you saw it somewhere else, or?
No, I did a course. There are schools overseas, and I think they're generally small outfits, as were we when we started. I think they're generally one or two ex-professional comedians who have gone into teaching. But what I did is I was a keynote speaker. As you mentioned in my intro, I wrote a book on China, Selling Big to China. And I, at that time, was doing a lot of keynote speeches around Asia and Australia. And I had a bad experience in Thailand at a conference for Johnson & Johnson, where the projector, it was in the evening on night one of this 3-day program, on 7 p.m. It was night. The projector didn't work, and the Thai operations assistant, a tech operator, he kind of turned to me, and in broken English and hand signals, he said, 5 minutes. Can you stall for 5 minutes? And I thought, yeah, I can probably do that. And so I engaged the audience, asked some questions, made a couple of sort of culturally relevant jokes to the Indians, Malaysians, Singaporeans, and Chinese within the room. And then I turned to the techie and said, all right, are we ready to go? And he turned to me with a shock in his face and said, 5 more minutes.
Was he just watching? Like, wasn't actually working on his tech problem.
Oh, possibly. maybe that was the problem. So it was a 10-minute window that I hadn't prepared for. And anyway, I got home and I told my wife about this experience, and it was horrific. And it was a terrible way to start a keynote address, with everyone looking at you waiting for you to begin. And my wife simply said to me, oh, you should have just done some stand-up comedy. Like, you know, as if it's just a natural thing that all people can do. And I said to her, yeah, I probably should. And I Googled, I was actually on a Melbourne tram at the time, and I Googled stand-up comedy course Australia or Melbourne, and there was one running in 2 weeks' time in Melbourne, but it was from Sydney. It was a Sydney course. And I signed up to it, paid the money, and I enjoyed it. I got a lot out of it. And having, at that time, I worked in the training space, and I worked in corporate training for about 16 years and run two businesses in that space, I thought, well, this is good, but I can do better. And I didn't invent the market. The market already existed, but it was a niche market, very, very small. And that organization that I studied with is, it's around, you won't hear much about it. And we've just taken it so much further over the last 4 years.
I love that. And hopefully, yeah, all the video marketing you've been doing will just grow bigger and bigger. And we can say that this podcast was just like the cusp of like exploding,
yeah,
where it was going to go.
That's right. Before I sold to Amazon. Yeah.
Yes, I know. I know Mario before he went to Amazon. before he sold his soul. I'm kidding.
Yeah, exactly.
okay, so you also create like user-generated video, like you mentioned with the start of COVID. So what is like that user-generated video? What is it? How can you make it work as a marketing tool for your own business?
So it happened by accident. A lot of things, they do happen by accident, and you need to have that.
Such thing as accidents. It all happens for a reason. It just,
yes, it's serendipity. Totally, totally serendipity. In fact, one of the TEDx talks that I gave in Shanghai was on serendipity. It was actually the 5 rules of serendipity for entrepreneurs. So if you want to watch that one,
I'll look it up.
yeah, that's a TEDx talk in Shanghai presented. Chance favors the prepared mind. So serendipity and chance favors the prepared mind are directly related. Your mind sees things that others don't see when it's prepared. And what was happening was we were producing videos of the graduation of our students. So the students at the School of Hard Knock Knocks do 5-day course. And on the last day, the fifth day, they perform a 5-minute set. Now, 5 minutes, it's 5 minutes feels like that 5 minutes when you need to use the toilet and you're on a bus and you're trying to get home. That's versus versus the 5 minutes of, you know, the most fun thing you've ever done, which is like a flick.
Yes.
It's a very long time for 5 minutes. It's around 20 jokes. And remember, these are 20 original jokes, your jokes. So we were filming them, and I was a bit go big or go home, a bit confident. And I put, rather than send a DVD, we're in that window between DVDs and digital, I uploaded the videos to Facebook. And I just said, hey, here's the link. And my fingers were crossed. Here's the link, I said to the students. And they said, oh, that's awesome. And then they said, do you mind if I share this with my friends and family? And I was expecting, oh, please don't put it on social media. I'm a little embarrassed by it. But in fact, I got the complete opposite. And I thought, why are you asking me? It's you. You're the one who did the jokes. And yeah, you're absolutely welcome to. And of course, there was a bumper, an intro at the beginning with the School of Hard Knock Knocks and a little watermark in the top right-hand corner. And I thought, oh, I'm onto something here. And I think we've had well over 300 people do the course in Sydney, Melbourne and Adelaide. And I think maybe less than a handful, less than five people have said, no, I don't want my video online. And in fact, what often happens is they'll come back and they'll do a course the second time. They'll pay to do it the second time. And they'll say, oh, can you remove my first one and put my second one on?
Because I think it's better. Obviously, it was still a bit too self-critical, that first one. That's why they didn't want it on, but they had a bit more confidence with the second version.
That's right. But again, of the we probably got about 200 videos. Each video is, again, roughly 5 minutes, which is branded as the School of Hard Knock Knocks, is shared by the student on Facebook, on social, any other social media platform.
Well, that's how I found out about it, because I saw someone had shared their achievements on Facebook or LinkedIn or whatever it was, and it had
that's amazing.
Yeah, so that's how I found out about it. So
that's amazing. And remember that this product that you watched, this marketing product, didn't cost me anything. In fact, the customer paid for this, because the product that we deliver is the training and the video. It's a package. And of course, we make sure that video is very high quality. We have three video cameras. We have audio. We have an intro bumper at the beginning. When we put it onto Instagram, we do subtitles or captions at the bottom. And the client pays for this. So anyone who's listening to this podcast and is thinking, well, how can I create essentially self-perpetuating brand? Okay, so anyone listening to this podcast try to think about how the customers can create the content. So it creates a self-perpetuating marketing, content marketing. So for the School of Hard Knock Knocks, the student has paid for the video. We then make a very high-quality video, which has an intro and an outro. And it, when we convert to Instagram, it has captions at the bottom. And then we upload it to Facebook. We don't send it directly to them. We upload it to Facebook and we tag them. It's uploaded to our own page. And then, of course, what happens, because it's uploaded to our company page, which is also populated by a lot of our alumni, graduates of the school, they get all these likes from people who've said, oh, that's awesome, well done, from people they don't even know. And it's that positive feedback loop which makes them go, oh, well, I mustn't be as bad as I thought I was. At the time, I thought I was terrible. And then they become more confident. They share it with their friends. And, of course, Leanne, you've seen it through a friend of a friend of a friend, perhaps. And that's called self-perpetuating marketing. So essentially, the more customers we get, the more marketing we create, and it doesn't cost us more. So yeah, what can you do? I guess the question to your listeners is, what can they do to convert those customers into, you know, video testimonials or examples, cases, for example?
I love that. And it's so true. I'm just thinking, if whether it's products they've used and they could be, I'm just going to show you where I burn these candles in my house and blah, blah. Or this is where I do my exercise and there's my teacher. Hey, and then just talking about themselves and the journey they've been on, video testimonial. Really cool and really powerful when it comes directly from the user, doesn't it? Because, and I say that with, you know, when you share your testimonials, whether it's video or written or whatever, on social media, it's like getting someone else to sing your praises, and it's not you. Hey, I'm just sharing what someone else said. I'm not, and it's just so powerful, that word of mouth building that trust there. Okay, so you mentioned a few different platforms. What other tips do you have about when and where to post videos?
Yeah, so, well, video is the thing, right? So we've got 5G coming up in the next, probably months in Australia. Maybe by Christmas there will be a large 5G network, which means video, and obviously we need the mobile phones to support 5G, but video just will become so ubiquitous. It will be, we won't even think about it. Remember you and I, when we got our first mobile phone, we didn't even have the choice of a video, probably. And then we were very cautious about downloading any video, watching any video, because of our, plan with Optus or Telstra.
Yep. I was too worried.
There goes my plan.
SMSs. I was like, oh, I can't any send, or how long I was on the phone, because, yeah.
Absolutely. But with 5G, I mean, a video that takes a minute to download will take a second. So it just will just be ubiquitous. So rule number one, start with video, because it won't be an issue. Then in terms of where can it go? Well, of course, your audience already knows Instagram, cut it down. Instagram has, was it IGTV? Is that what it's called? Instagram television. I've uploaded the trailer, which is 5 minutes, to Instagram IGTV, and it has got 250 views, which, you know, is good and keeps churning away there. We do cut down, going back to those user generated videos, we cut those into 60 seconds. The raw Instagram limit is 60 seconds. If it's over 60 seconds, then it gets sort of moved into the Instagram TV space. So under 60 seconds, you can put something in there. We do that. We have just straight to the comedian with their name and the title of their joke with some captions, and we put it on Instagram. That's awesome. Twitter a little bit, but Twitter these days, I think, is more of a written format. So it's more of a text with maybe one supporting image. Generally is where I go to get information about a particular news, a breaking news event. I would go to Twitter first for news. So it's not so much for my medium, but if your medium in the health and wellbeing space is about and does cover new research that's coming out, then Twitter would be awesome as well, because that gets picked up quickly by key opinion leaders within that space.
That's where the media hang out. Journalists, that's the place to be. I personally haven't really gotten into it. I tried it, I'm not into it. But you could always, I guess, share your YouTube channel like links on Twitter and have one one-liners. I guess you could have some little jokes or something with a one-liner going, hey, want to do it this learn how to do this yourself, or how good are you at telling jokes and bit of teasers. But yeah,
that's right.
Who's going there, you want to make sure it's landing on the right eyes.
Yeah. And remembering that all the different platforms that I've mentioned, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, they all have different half-lives, you know, meaning that by half-life, I mean, you know, how long does the image or video remain in the eyes of the consumer, the person that, you know, consuming that video or image in many cases. So something like Instagram, it's gone. It's gone within probably an hour. You know, Twitter could last 2 days, for example, particularly if it's relevant to something that's breaking, a news event, for example. Facebook, probably, you know, minutes to seconds, you know, your feed, unless you scroll, and often, you know, often it doesn't appear at all because of the algorithm Facebook has. But YouTube will last forever, because YouTube is really a search engine. You know, when I wanted to learn guitar, when I wanted to learn how to cook a particular Chinese dish, when I was setting up my podcasting space, maybe when you were doing the same with your podcasting studio, you would have gone to YouTube to find an answer in one or two cases. And it will go back to 2015, 2017, right? You'll get videos that aren't 2 minutes ago. And that's the power of video. So particularly long form video as well. So, yeah. And as we know, memes and things that are funny, they come back. So if you do have something that's funny, it may come back into the feed of Facebook and Instagram. But for most part, it kind of disappears.
Very true. And actually, on that note, yeah, just the other day, there was a quote that I put on my Facebook page like October last year, and someone randomly shared it the other day. So I was going through my page and dug up something old. And I'm like, I was actually surprised that something from so long ago had been dug up. And yeah, what you were saying about YouTube, that's part of the reason why I intend to get these podcasts onto YouTube. I haven't yet, because it just feels like there's a whole other barrier, and I need to get someone to edit it for me, which I have someone in mind, but just haven't got there. But yes, because we're just like podcasts. It's going to be, you'll always be able to find it, but the video, you can obviously connect on a whole different level.
Absolutely. And the other thing about video is remembering that it's a cascading effect, that if you write something on Twitter, you can't go up to video. But when you go, when you start at video, you can go down to Twitter. So what do I mean by that? If I have a video, look, I've done something that not many people do, create long form video. Long form video is anything sort of over 5 minutes long. So I've got these long form video. So this is a long form video. You and I are being filmed. So you've got that content and then we can put that onto YouTube. But we can then take that video and we can cut that down into smaller bite-sized chunks. So for example, if you just wanted me to talk about, Chance Favors the Prepared Mind and just wanted that 1 minute clip of me talking about Chance Favors the Prepared Mind, you can cut that down. So it cascades down. Then we can just take the audio. So we can use, I'm not sure if you, Leanne, use software like rev.com, rev.com. Yep. It's a platform I've used quite a lot for my podcasting. And so I'll put my podcast into Rev and it's a US dollar per minute. So a 5 minute it will cost you $5, 30 minutes, $30 US. That creates a script. I then dump that directly into my website. And of course, Google loves text and it loves to associate, text and SEO. So then from that text, you can then pull out quotes and that can be cut down into your Twitter feeds or, as you just discussed then, an Instagram quote with some pretty pictures and your name underneath it, for example. And that's the cascade that video creates. So, yeah.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing those tips today. I could talk about it all day. I always ask my guests this, and it is, how do you manage your health and wellness?
Yeah, so I got that question early on. I was just thinking I probably could do a better, I think anyone could do a better thing, a better deal in during COVID. I've always been a gym person. I love to do my headphones on, get on the bike or do run and just stay out of everyone's way. And when the gyms closed, I lost that. And my wife is a big junkie when it comes to YouTube aerobics. I don't even know what the name is, but you see these people on the screen and they're just rippling with muscles, male or female. And they take you through this 30 minutes of sheer agony. And it just didn't appeal to me. So during COVID, my wife has got me a yoga mat and we stand in front of the television, which is linked to YouTube, and we watch these people and they just drive us we just sweating and I probably have become fitter since COVID because of that mental. Plus, mentally, my wife and I have become a lot closer together because she's fine. I'm demonstrating that, one, I'm listening to her. She's like, come on, you should do this, and I'm doing it. And two, we're kind of suffering together. And I think any relationship where you suffer together only makes you stronger.
How was that? Suffer together, stay together. That's what they say, right?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Yeah.
As long as we're not suffering from each other, then yeah, it's all good.
No, exactly. A common enemy. That bloody YouTube aerobics instructor. I hate her. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Well, thank you so much for everything you've taught us today. And so, yeah, how can people connect with you?
Yeah, sure. Well, if they want to, step one, they need to watch Is This Thing On? So go on to YouTube and do a Google search for Is This Thing On? ? You'll probably get a video of, I think, the female singer Pink. I think she has a song which ranks a little bit higher than mine at the moment. But look for the video series. If you're interested in stand-up comedy, of course, the School of Hard Knock Knocks. And then I do have a Facebook page called Maury Morgan, which is, I think I've got about 26 videos from the streets of China, predominantly Beijing and Chongqing, where I've just been sort of following the virus, COVID-19, the pandemic, what's been happening on the street, trying to cover a few of the, the conspiracies that are out there about what China is or isn't doing. Hopefully, if you watch that, you'll be a bit more positive about the future of Australia because China's getting through it. The restaurants are open. The bars are open. They are wearing masks. No one's falling over from lack of oxygen. It's all good. That's called Maury Morgan. It's just a Facebook page.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed our chat today. And I hope our listeners have taken away some key tips as well. So I really appreciate it.
No worries. Well, thank you very much for the invitation. Thanks, Leanne.
Thank you. And thank you to you, dear listener, for tuning in. You can find show notes for the episode at marketingandme.com.au. If you enjoyed listening, please subscribe and leave me a rating and review by your podcast app or at ratethispodcast.com/marketingandme. If you're interested in connecting with me, feel free to reach out via LinkedIn. Just search for Leanne Shelton. And if you want to learn more about generating leads or outsourcing your copywriting to me, head to my website, righttimemarketing.com.au, and book in a free 30-minute discovery call. So until next time, I wish you good health and good wealth.